Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm sitting here today with Craig Hanley, the CEO of Listen Trust and best-selling author of Hired to Quit, Inspired to Stay. How you doing, Craig?
I'm good.
I know you are a traveling man.
How are you?
I know you're traveling, man, and hard to get a hold of, so it's great to have you on today. Very excited. We got to meet last summer at a nice little event down south, and shoot, we've been messaging back and forth ever since.
It was, I would say it was love at first sight. What can I say? I was smitten right out of the gates.
How could you?
Is that a word?
I mean,
yeah. Sounds like a record I should write. You know, I was smitten right out of the gates.
Right out of sounds the gates. Like, let me tell you about Travis and Matt.
So I was also a former Army infantry way back when in 1990, 91, that's 92, that time frame. That means I'm old. So
yeah,
you know, older. Yeah. I'm only as old as you.
I'm 3 weeks from retirement myself from my 21-year naval career. End of February, great. I'm all done.
Congratulations.
Oh, it's exciting. In fact, when this thing is released, I will be retired. I will be USN retired.
You can get discounts on cruises for the rest of your life.
I'm looking forward to it. Then I just need to hit AARP status and I'll be all set.
Oh, they start shipping you that stuff when you turn 40. I've been getting, my dad's name is Craig too. So I've been getting AARP stuff since I turned 40. Like these, I want to swear about it. I'm like, these are my model.
You know, I actually had a chance to meet a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, Phil Randazza, who's been a guest on the show. When I flew out to Vegas, I interviewed him. I was still in Bahrain and I flew to Vegas and I met two of my previous guests, Dave Berlin and Phil Randazzo. And Phil's a mutual friend of ours. You've actually got a chance to speak at his American Dream U. How did that go?
Always good. I have a certain skill, right? I can't go out and, you know, if your daughter was sex trafficked, whatever, I can't go find her. Like the guy in the movies there that goes, I've got a certain set of skills. I have a certain set of skills around marketing, right? So for me, I went into, it was a Zoom conference because it was during the pandemic, but I literally talked about some of the things that I've done. And then we went, it was kind of unique in that we went one by one. And I went to literally 20 people that were in that room, and maybe there were 35, I got through like 20 of them. And we did one-on-one hot seats where I explained to them different ways through marketing that we could enhance their business. And it was so cool. And all 20 of them were just like, this is great, you know? And I've had relationships with them ever since because they've used some of the things I've given them and they've all started to see success. So it was a pretty fun thing. And it's kind of what drives me today where I've had a lot of success. And, you know, what do you live for, right? Well, for me, I live for helping others. And of course, being a veteran myself, helping former military members come out and get their entrepreneurial feet wet, you know, is it's an honor for me to have the privilege, you know, so it's kind of cool. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Oh, that's awesome. And you're on the right show, the Nonprofit Architect. That's what everyone that's listening to the show, that's what we live for, is helping people. But you've also done things on the other side of the world where, like, you've met Richard Branson. Does he have anything to say about nonprofit work?
Yeah, he does. I mean, Branson, he's funny. You know, Virgin Unite is a giant charity who, you know, really attacks problems around the world. He's got his elders program and he's got, you know, his ocean program and all these things. But a lot of Richard's early work in Virgin and Virgin Unite was just Richard, right? He literally charges $250,000 for a speech and he donates 100% of it to Virgin Unite. So he's an expensive guy to get, but he didn't really have a lot of processes in place to get donations from the B2C crowd, you know, or the C2B. So there weren't a lot of consumers who knew about Virgin Unite. But we were talking about charity and when the right time to give was. He said, first of all, if you own a business, you can tie yourself to a charity and help support it with your, you know, with your gross profit in a business. He says, but for you to donate anything, you have to be making money first. he also said that when you do work at a nonprofit, you know, you want to make sure you can take care of yourself before you try to take care of others. And he says, taking care of yourself can mean a number of things. It can mean humbly that you can stay in a halfway decent house and get food on the table and pay your bills. He said, and there are some that, you know, want a little bit more comfortable life than that. He said, but he said, there's nothing wrong with wanting to take care of yourself to do good for others. And he said, the reality is the more good you do for others, the better you should treat yourself. You know, he says, I live on an island, but I donate billions of dollars to charity. He said, so it's all, you know, put it all in perspective. He said, if you don't have a lot to give, maybe you come from humble beginnings, it's great. But he says, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be better. You know, you can't have it all, but you could probably be better. And it's okay to do that and to grow your business or your charity along those lines of doing good and doing better. Make sense?
I speak regularly on the fact that you can't pour from an empty cup. You've got to be able to fill that cup up first. And whatever that means to you, those listening, whatever that looks like, whether that's taking care of the bills, taking care of the household, taking care of a little self-care, time for you, whether it's reading, relaxing, learning, whatever the thing is, however you unwind, but making sure that you can take care of you first so you're capable and energetic when you take care of others.
And those aren't mutually exclusive, you know. I ran a program at my call center. I have close to, I have almost 1,000 employees at my call center in Mexico. And we did a survey, a 45 question survey about the cleanliness of the bathrooms, you know, how happy were they? It was basically to rate our happiness scores. And we gave 50-cent pay raise for an upsell position to track what happens. And the close rate for the upsell went up by 17 points. So paying 50 cents definitely creates a positive result around an upsell position, you know, in a phone script. But the survey we pushed out again, you know, maybe 45 days later, and the questions were all answered the same way. No one was any happier. Well, then we tried to give a dollar away to charity for every upsell. And the conversion rate went to 15%. So it was 2 points lower than what happens when we gave away cash to the employees. However, what's really interesting is our happiness scores on our 45 question survey went through the roof. Everybody was happier. As a result, our original close rate, which was at 27%, was actually at 33%. So 15% in the upsell position was actually a greater increase than the 17%, because happiness actually created a lift in conversion on my floor. And so I was able to prove through science that giving to charity is profitable in almost any business. Isn't that unique? I mean, I love the, and it wasn't me doing the study. It was Forrester Research. So it was kind of fun.
See, I think that's fantastic. I know when we met and we talked the first time, I definitely knew I wanted to talk to you. And then I read your book, Hired to Quit and Inspired to Stay. And the reason that I really wanted to bring you on is because there's so many parallels between running a call center when you have a very high turnover rate, generally speaking, not in your case, but generally speaking, low morale, low happiness scores. And when you look at people in the nonprofit world, the way that they run their employees, you have a very high turnover rate where you have people that are in top positions like executive director for an average of 15 months, which at 15 months in any industry, you don't really know anything yet. You know a couple of things. You don't know all the board members' names. You're not really, depending on how good you are or how engrossed you are, like you don't even know all the operations yet. But people are leaving at that 15-month point. And I know there's a high turnover rate in call centers as well. But you really did something differently when you understood that happiness rate and you created other programs for your employees. Do you go ahead and share a little bit about that?
I had this training program. I was trying to train my agents to sell. And we route calls based on performance. So the better you are, the more phone calls you get. And you also get a better commission if you're really good. And so I was trying to explain to people that building a world-class call center was my dream, but what's their dream? And the way they get closer to their dream is to succeed at my company. As a matter of fact, the better they do, the sooner they could quit and go live their own dream. And it evolved into a conversation about me talking to people about what they wanted to do all their lives. What did they want to do when they were a little kid? Did they want to be a fireman or a chef or... And so we really started talking about it. And then I basically created a blueprint for them to quit my business and go work for their own. and I started building all the sales tools internally. So we have an intranet, and I filled it with TED Talks, but also like masterclasses on buying Facebook media, a masterclass on doing a podcast, a masterclass on, you know, how to buy, what programmatic media is, or how to do YouTube ads, or, and I built all these things internally, and I would help people with a blueprint to quit. And we literally had over 100 people who not only improved at their job with the culture that we had managed to build, but we had over 100 people quit. And one girl wanted to work for the government. We had this lawyer. He got out of law school and couldn't find a job. So I trained him on how to do a podcast. He spoke with every lawyer in town about their legal profession. They love the publicity, right? Lawyers are media hounds. They want to be well known. So when he talked to them all, he asked them all the same question. Where is the hole in Hermosillo in the legal space? And he got the answer. Well, 6 months after working for me as a call center agent, he hung out his own shingle. He called all his friends that he did podcasts with and said, hey, I hung out a shingle. I'm specializing in the hole. And they all refer business to him. He immediately needed to hire 4 or 5 people. So he didn't have to wait 10 years to become a partner in a law firm. We did it in 6 months. And I've got so many stories like that. Well, at some point, my employees told me, hey, Craig, you've been great for us, but you want to be a musician. What are you doing here running operations? And so it was kind of this thing where my employees convinced me to quit. You know, so I went out and started writing music, and in the process was working on branding myself, and ended up building another $1 million business called Social Close, where we're doing social media marketing for people. And of course, it's a business that helps people all over the world. We're basically giving away $20,000 in value from a marketing or media buy standpoint for around $5,000, and just helping people, you know, go after their dreams. It's kind of like Hired to Quit, but it's an agency that serves people who do quit. You know, so I kind of spun off, and I was all this stuff I was doing for other people, I turned it into a business, but it was actually all by accident. I didn't mean for it to happen, you know, but now that's what I do. I mean, I sit down with somebody through Social Close. We find out what their dreams are and what their goals are. And I show them a marketing plan to get there, and they can hire my team to do it, which about 50% do, or they can take my blueprint and try to do it on their own, you know, and I'm happy with that as well. I don't care about money, because success doesn't equal money. Success equals helping others while taking care of yourself and living a good life. So I'm not ashamed of the fact that I make enough money to enjoy my life. But I also know that because of that, I can do so much more for people in this world than most people can do. So pretty proud of that, you know, being able to do those things.
Well, you should be. It's admirable. It's not you-centered, and it equals more good in the world. So, I mean, why wouldn't you be happy about that?
See, you know, if only I was good looking as you, I'd have it all.
Well, my friends definitely tell me I have a voice for podcasting and a face for podcasting.
My friends tell me I have a face for radio.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Is that a compliment or an insult? I don't know.
I'm just happy that I have friends.
Yeah, I'm pleased I got a couple.
You know, I was going through your book because I listened to the audiobook driving back from where we are, Mobile, back to Oklahoma City. I was listening to your book and really trying to draw the parallels between that, because I feel like people that are in the nonprofit industry that are really working, that are working hard and doing things, like, they're in it more than people in the military are in it. They're like in execution mode. And what happens in that space is they often forget about training. They often forget about, you know, relaxing and, you know, rebuilding themselves up, and they forget about having they're in the business of doing good, yet so many of them feel miserable. And I know that for the vast majority of call centers around there that are out there, you're not enjoying your time in a call center. What was the real, like, push for you to want to reach in and take the time to make the changes in your staff's life?
As I was a kid, I was bullied. 7th, 8th grade, I had like 11 kids waiting to beat me up every day. And I moved schools, and it kind of puts a chip on your shoulder. You want to prove to people you're worthy of being loved, right? And so I got that whole motivation and that drive to help others, I think, through that process. but also that drive to be the best, that Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady-esque mindset around success and around achievement. So I always felt like if I could just get a couple more hours in, I'd be doing more than somebody else. If I could just watch one more YouTube video that teaches me this, or I just, you know, went to the School of Hard Knocks and I went to college for music, for God's sakes. I mean, not business. So, and I just happen to be good at marketing, but I've learned a lot of life lessons along the way. I've been humbled, right? And you've got to learn these things. You've got to learn that you need to plan your strengths. If your strengths aren't marketing, but it's execution, well, get out of marketing. Get somebody who's going to help you with marketing. If you're great with marketing, but you suck at execution, get out of execution. Don't do it. I know you might have to do it in the beginning, but you really don't. Find somebody else who can do it so you can live a better quality of life. Meditate. I recently had some saddlebag blood clots, like maybe from the pandemic or the virus or the vaccine or whatever, but I tested every organ in my body and, you know, behind that and found some other issues. But I have this little belief in everything that little hinges swing big doors. And a lot of people, I don't think, take the time to see how a little hinge, picture a door, there's three hinges, sometimes only two, but that big door swings. And I've done that when I built my call center. I started with building a center in Mexico because we were targeting U.S. Hispanics, where 70% of the audience speaks a Mexican Spanish. Well, I know that mirroring a customer, having the same accent as them, increases close rate by 3 to 5%. Okay? When you personalize a disarm and a greeting and you can build rapport, I had a buddy of mine who was in the Navy, and he used to be on the phones. And every time he answered the phone, he'd go, "Hey, where are you calling us from?" They'd say, "Okefenokee, Florida." He didn't care. No kidding. I used to live there when I was in the military. I was just on Main Street near the McDonald's. And he sold every customer he spoke to because he was a local boy, you know? And I don't know. I don't think he lived in any of those places, but he was able to relate to people. That's a little hinge that swings a big door. When I talk to people, I say, "I'm a musician. So if her name is Caroline, oh, are you the girl they wrote that song about? Which one? You know, Sweet Caroline or Denise." Oh, sometimes I used to sing on the phones. "Oh, Denise, shoo-be-doo." Right? Just crazy shit stuff. Sorry, we're on a podcast. Anyway, you know, I believe in little hinges. And so everything that I do, I try to do in a small way. My friend BJ Fogg wrote a book called Tiny Habits. Excellent book. But in working on my business and my health, I always look for the little hinges. And you know what? I want to get a bag of hinges. I don't want to make giant impacts on anything. I want to make 20 little changes that will create the bigger impact. And I think if you're running a charity, instead of trying to do everything, think about the tiny habits that you can change. So in order to improve my health, as of September, I haven't had, except for once, I had, I guess, one of my x-rays showed a couple of tiny gallstones. So my doctor prescribed a 6-pack of Coca-Cola to be drank within 20 minutes. And he said that will get rid of these tiny gallstones. I don't know if it's true or not, but since September, I haven't had any other drinks with artificial sweetener. So I have water and like a sparkling water with no artificial sweetener. That's it. So September. That's a tiny change that can improve your health. But I want to lose weight too. So what are the tiny changes? Slowly but surely, I added meditation. And I know my cortisol levels are really high, which makes it hard to lose weight. And that's part of stress. So now I'm trying to meditate 3 days a week. So I hired a meditation coach to work on that aspect. And then I'm eating less sugar. And I've started supplementing like hearts of palm pasta instead of spaghetti or whatever. So all these tiny changes lead up to the most significant changes you're ever going to make in your life. And so I think the lesson here for a nonprofit is don't think because something seems insignificant that it can't lead to significant change. Make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's all the gurus in the space that talk about doing things. They're not talking about big 10X. Things.
We're gonna 10X your business. We're gonna 10X it. How? You know how you 10X a business? You make about 50 small changes.
but everything is based on these small things we do today. You know, atomic habits, everything else. When I was young, enlisted in the military, and I had a few people working for me, they were like, "Well, how do we get like to where you are?" And I was like, "Here's the deal." I was like, are you're young, right? And they're like, yeah, we're young. Like, are you single? Yeah, I'm single. What do you do when your shift is over? And a lot of them would say, you know, I'm going to get out of here as fast as I can. And I was like, what if you get 20 minutes to work on the things that just you want to work on? And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, 20 minutes is not, that's not a whole lot. You know, I'm not saying you stay for half an hour of work. I'm not suggesting that at all. But 15 or 20 minutes of working on the thing that you want to work on, whether if it's a qualification or working on a program or going to do your college or whatever the thing is, if you put in 20 minutes a day extra, A, you're going to be ahead of, you know, at least an hour or more of your peers every week. You're going to be around doing things that benefit you, and people are going to see you doing good things that are, you, they see you working on you. And you're going to know that you just don't have to sprint out of here like it's the plague, like you've got to get away from work. And there's, inevitably a few guys that won't do it, and a few guys that'll do it and drop off, and a few guys that'll stick with it. And the few guys that stick with it with just a few extra minutes just for them, just for the thing that they want to focus on, those are the people that their careers took off. A few extra minutes focusing on the thing that they cared about most, whatever that happened to be, are the ones that made the rank and got the promotions and got the sweet, you know, duty stations and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're much more happier and productive in life because those little few minutes, and I'm not suggesting that nonprofits work more time because I know how much time you put in, but that few little things specifically for something for them that they cared about, that they wanted, that attention to the thing that they personally wanted is the thing that propelled them through the end.
Well, there's a book out there called Flow. And my friend Vishen Lakhiani has written a couple of really good books around flow, getting into flow. And a lot of people don't understand how valuable it is to be in flow. What that means is you can accomplish more in 2 hours than you can accomplish in 2 weeks if you can get into flow. What's it take to get into flow? You've got to be going to the gym and eating right. You've got to be meditating. You've got to be taking care of yourself. Self-care makes you more effective because it allows you to get into flow. And most people wonder how I accomplish all the things I do. Like, you gave me a brief intro, but I'm also the marketing, chief marketing officer for a company called Branded Entertainment. They're pushing out 5 TV shows this year. I do all of that work. I'm a musician. I write a minimum of 3 songs a week, right? And I've not only got to write them, but I've got to get them produced. I do sing, but I hire a singer a lot of times to, see, for me to save time, I could probably learn production, but I work with 4 or 5 great producers. I'm always looking to add to my, you know, to my producer Rolodex. And so I write the record and then I get it put out and then it comes back to me with a great, you know, I of course send reference tracks or anything else. I'm directing the creation of the production. And of course, I'm directing the melody with the singer. And so all that stuff gets done. But, you know, beyond that, I'm running 2 different companies. I've got kids. I've got travel. But how do I get it all done? People just look at my body of work and go, it's unbelievable. And sometimes I don't know how I do it, but I do know that I do get a lot of stuff done. But I think it's because I'm in flow a lot of times. And when I'm not, I try to do a little bit more meditation or a little pranic healing, or I do some self-care, a massage, something to get me back into that flow that I know I deserve. I deserve to be in flow. So do you.
And everyone listening to this deserves to be in flow. If you're bashing,
that's what I meant when I said, so I looked right at the camera and said, so do you. I don't know if this, and if this is just an audio file, they're not going to know. I just looked right at them, you know? So I don't know. I don't know whether this is a video podcast or an audio. So maybe it's just so you know, the listener, I just looked right at you and pointed. So do you. That's what I said. So yeah. Cleared that up.
I was going through some business book and they were talking about this stack of 10 people and they all had to do this certain task and there was a whole set of things and they noticed the average time for completing this set of tasks was like 4 hours. And the manager was like, 4 hours? How can this possibly take 4 hours? What is it about this thing that takes so long? He's like, well, I remember doing it when I was younger and I could get it done in 3 hours. Why has it taken 4 hours? And they went through and they checked to see all of these people and how they were doing with all these different sections of things. And they found that different parts of the process were being done well and done faster by certain types of people. And, you know, the six people did this first section really well. And then these next three people did the next section really well. But there was only one guy that could really finish it off, get all the paperwork done. And then they went and asked these people, like, what about this process do you really like or not like? And inevitably, the parts that they were able to do really fast and smooth with no mistakes were the parts they were doing so quickly, like that they really enjoyed. And they changed the way they were doing the process. And they gave the first section, instead of dividing it by 10, they gave it to these six people that did that first section really well. And they crushed it in just 20 to 30 minutes. And all of those got moved down to the next three people for the next section that they really enjoyed, that they did really well. And they crushed it in another 30 minutes. So we're already 3 hours ahead of schedule, but there was only one guy that did that last part and really did the fine work and fine details that was really needed. And it took him longer than 4 hours to do the 10 things. It took him 5 hours, but overall time saved was enormous. Some people listening to this that have people doing processes that have their world-class fundraiser out there raising money, you have that same person for whatever reason coming back and doing 6 hours of paperwork that he hates, that he's no good at, that takes his time and drains his energy. Sometimes we got to change our processes to fit the person and not the position. Because if he was out there doing all that legwork that he loved doing, that he was making great money and bringing in those donations, and someone else that enjoys paperwork was doing that, and that was a poor producer out in the field, now you've doubled or tripled or quadrupled your production because the right person's doing the right part of the job.
Yep.
I don't think a lot of people in business, when they get to a certain level, business or nonprofit work, take a look at the person, the actual person in the position. And is that position fully encompassed in something that they do that's in their flow, their zone of genius, or not? Have you seen this?
Yeah. And a lot of things, look, people get caught up in ego. Like, I know my strength is marketing and being up there, but I happen to be probably better than 90% of the people at operations, right? I mean, but I don't love it. And there are people out there that love operations. So I've made decision to not do operations, even though I understand it and I'm actually very good at it. I don't love it. So I know it's not where I live in my best world, you know? So I try to stay in my best world, which is marketing and creativity, music. I mean, I try to live there. Although it's not that I don't get dragged into operations every now and then. I mean, last week I was doing comp plans and bonus plans and looking at finances, and that's all operational stuff. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm dumb to those things, but those things take more time for me to do. So it takes me out of flow. You know, it's not that you don't have to do that sometimes, but the more I can avoid those things, the better. So I've got a finance team that prepares everything for me. I am really intuitive in my numbers. I can tell when a number is wrong. I don't know why or where, but I have a who. I don't need to know the how, right? So I think there's a book by Benjamin Hardy called Who Not How. And it's so relevant. It's not how you do something. It's who's going to help you do it, right? And that's so important in business. So I've got a finance guy. Hey, Gary, that number's wrong. Why do you think it's wrong? Well, just intuitively, when I look at everything that I see in our other reports, like an example of this is he had our payroll percentage at 59% for a client. And I had just made changes to it that I knew brought it under 50%. In my business, if my payroll is over 50%, I typically lose money, right? Because I need the margin to cover marketing and other expenses. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at a number at 59% and I said, it's wrong. I just did work. So I went and got another spreadsheet and I pulled it out and it showed 42%. And he had inverted the numbers. So he thought he was putting 58, but it was supposed to be 42. So our margin, he had our cost as 58, but really our cost was 42. Yeah. And so I intuitively knew that number was wrong, but I didn't know why or where. I just had to take the time to do it. So yeah.
No, that's interesting.
My girlfriend called and I muted it to say, I'm on a podcast. I'll call you back. I didn't think your audience needed to hear all that, you know, but.
It adds to the realism, the authenticity.
That's right. Yeah, it does.
You know, a lot of people ask me about podcasting. They're like, how do you do all the back end stuff? The audio production. I was like, well, I don't do it. And they're like, you started without, you didn't do it right away. I was like, no, I wanted it to sound professional from the start. I knew I didn't have the time, and I knew that that's not where my personal talent lies. And I'm not trying to say that I'm some, you know, talented, amazing podcaster or whatever, but like, I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. Like, this guy, Travis, is not going to go play a game of pickup basketball. I'm not. I'm short. I'm wide. I'm a little bit clumsy. I am not going to go play a pickup game of basketball. That's not going to help anybody. It's not going to help my team. It's not going to help me stay in shape or, you know, not get injured. I know where my strengths lie, and I am not going to spend and waste my time in an area that I don't have my strengths. There's so many ways to get other people involved. If you're in the nonprofit world, you've got volunteers, but so many people in the nonprofit world don't know who their volunteers are. You're talking about having the right people. I forget the book, but Malcolm Gladwell was writing about getting the right people on the bus. If you've got someone that's gossipy and cancerous, it doesn't matter what their skills are.
That's Jim Collins. Good to great.
Jim Collins. Good. Great. Yeah. Jim Collins.
Yeah. He talks about having the right people on the bus.
If you get the wrong people on the bus, it doesn't matter what their skills are. Well, so many people are like, I want to hire for skills. Don't hire for skills. Hire for integrity. Hire for trust. You can teach anybody the skills. You can find a job for them that build the right skills, but don't just hire because, oh, they have a piece of paper or they say they're good at Excel. Are they good at Excel? Is that their zone of genius? Is that in their flow? How do you know? Actually figure out and know who these people are. I've had a few people I know that are wealthy, and they go volunteer at nonprofits, and without saying who they are, without getting into the details, because they have heard about the nonprofit, they want to contribute, and they go and volunteer to see how their volunteers are treated before they say yes. And too many nonprofits are stuck in that we've got to get this thing done. So they've got someone that's waiting to write you a $10 million check, moving chairs, and you haven't even asked their name or welcomed them or thanked them for being there or found out if they have any skills that will be more helpful than moving chairs.
Tony Shea used to pick people up on the Zappos bus, and he used to be the guy picking them up, and he'd wait to see how they treated the bus driver. So, I mean, they were always quite shocked when Tony picked them up. But then when the time for the interview came, he was the one that was doing the interview. They were like, what are you doing in here? You're just a bus driver. And he'd say, and that's why you're just leaving. It was so cool. You know,
I've seen the same thing with whoever's doing the interview will be sitting outside as a bum panhandling to see how the candidates treat him on the way in. Do they treat him as a person? They say something foul. You know, do they just kind of ignore it? Like what is their interaction with person of lower, considered lower stature?
Yep. How do you treat people? I tell young people all the time when I'm mentoring, I say to young people, you know, in my phone, I've got 10 billionaires and like 350 millionaires. How does my phone have that many successful people? 20 years ago, maybe it's because I was bullied as a kid, and maybe it's because I wanted to go to music school and my parents were like, you know, that's not going to be a real career. You should do something else and music. It wasn't that they weren't supportive, but they weren't really interested in watching me try to pursue music as a career. So I wanted to believe in people, and I started believing in people at a young age, and you never know it, but shockingly, some of these people I believed in were successful 20 years later. Wow. Who would have known? I think if you're young, if you're 20, if you want to do something, if you want to be a gamer, just start playing video games now and start building your network of other gamers. 20 years from now, some of those guys who weren't successful when you were trying to talk to them, they're going to be successful and you're going to be their friend and they're going to lift you up with them. You know, Lil Wayne was the first guy to get signed out of his, I don't know what they were called, like the chicken coop guys or whatever. Lil Wayne was the first guy to get signed, but then they signed 14 other kids that were in his neighborhood, all because of Lil Wayne. He was signed by university. He was 14 years old. And when he went out to university, he brought a fucking crew with him, a whole bunch of people. And they all eventually, Cash Money and all these other, you know, they all got signed eventually. And that's, I think, what it is in any industry. If you want to be successful, go to nonprofit shows, talk to other nonprofit people, join masterminds that help nonprofits, you know, do all these great things. And you'll be successful eventually. You'll have friends that have made it and they'll be lifting you up eventually.
I don't think people understand, even though they're in nonprofits and they talk to people every day, this the power of relationships. We met at a networking business event thing. And which was, by the way, probably my favorite event that I've ever been to. Everyone was just so open, so engaging. There was no like standoffish or trying to figure out how you measured up. Everyone was just so welcoming. And when you go to an event like that, or you curate an event like that, so many things change with not only within you, but within the organization that you're a part of. Be part of that change. Be part of those people you want to be like, that you want to be around. Create that event, that environment where everyone's happy to be there, excited to be there. I got to interview Steve Sims, author of The Art of Bluefishing, which is a fantastic book. And he's such a great guy. Like, people are giving money when they're happy, when they're engaged, when they're seen and heard and felt. Yeah, like, they're valued.
Steve's a good friend of mine.
Oh yeah, he's wonderful. But create that environment that people want to be a part of, that people want to, like, I'm a raving fan in the group that we're in. Like, I'm in. I love it. From everything I can tell, from all the people I've met, from the way we interact and the way we treat each other, like, I'm a raving fan. What do you have to do in your organization to create raving fans? I've seen what you've done with your call center.
Well, even in my marketing business, Social Close, that's what we do. Like our strategy with charities is to go out into the social media world, and we literally find raving fans. We build groups on Facebook filled with raving fans. So, and we organize content. So when content is pushed out, it's pushed out not only with you, but with all your raving fans. You want to go viral, you got to have a tribe. You can't do it by yourself. And I think there's a lot of nonprofit people that, I don't know whether they think they're better than other people, or, you know, they, because they're in a nonprofit, it's maybe a status thing, or, but they don't ask for help. And you got to ask for help, man. You got to ask for help. You can't do it on your own. Even Santa Claus delivers all those presents in one night, but it's all done by the elves. You know, the elves are the ones who make all that happen.
Absolutely. I want to, in my business, the things that I'm doing, I want to get something done as quickly as possible. Sometimes that's me. That's me. Sometimes it's like, hey, Craig, do you know how to do this thing? How do I get this done? Oh, it's not you. Oh, but you know somebody? Hey, I really appreciate you. Let me know how I can help you in the future. And you call that guy, you get to that person that can get that thing done, because I don't know how to do everything. And even if I did, I don't want to do everything. Are you the same way? You have a group of people that you go ask?
I don't do a lot of execution at all. People think that I'm an awesome executioner. I have Karen and I have Sinai and I have, you know, I have Abraham and I have a Sally. I have people around me who embarrass me when it comes to execution. I have, like, I'm playing basketball and I might be a great 3-point shooter, but I've got Michael Jordan, you know, next to me in almost every business I'm in. So I can pass the puck or pass the ball, you know? And so, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't do the things that I'm not great at. I try to keep amazing people around me so that I don't have to, you know, so I can focus on where my true skills lie.
What is something that people in nonprofits need to hear?
Well, they need to hear that they need to take care of themselves first. I look at a lot of nonprofits. Most of them don't have any money. Most of them are expecting a big $100,000 donation, or they're expecting big things. And to get the big things, you have to do the little things. And it's hard when you don't have any budget and you don't want to take any help and you just want to create your own little pamphlets and your own. I don't know. I see a lot of nonprofits that struggle. And I think it's just ego. They just got to let go and understand that you're not the only person in the world that wants to cure hunger, or the only person in the world that wants to fix smiles or save the animals. There are so many other groups that want to. And sometimes you think they're your competition, but they're not. Your competition is always your best resource for ideas and inspiration. They're doing things that you could maybe learn from and take from. And maybe you have something you can teach them. And the people that are successful, they don't believe in confidentiality. They believe in giving. Of course, I believe in confidentiality, but anything that I know, I give freely. Steal my ideas, please. You know, flatter me. Guess what? I'm really successful. So if you steal my ideas, they might work. You know, I'm like, I don't care. You know, doesn't matter to me. I just want to see people succeed. So I guess that would be a few messages. I think I said more than one.
You're allowed to do that.
I like to break the rules anyway. If I'm not allowed, I'm a rule breaker. So that's how it is.
All the innovative people in the world are rule breakers.
Mostly.
Oh, you think the Wright brothers were in the aviation industry? No, they're outsiders. Bicycle repairman.
But they didn't do anything illegal, right? I always find ways to do things the right way, but in a different way. So when I'm trying to write music for Sync, I'm talking to directors directly. I'm not going to Sync agencies that take 50% of my money to pass on their contacts. All they're doing is they created a network. I'm better at building networks than most Sync agencies. So why wouldn't I build my own network? You know, so that's how I break the rules. I tend to go where people fear to go. And I find that there's so little competition because most people are just afraid to try. 95% of the world is afraid to try to reach out to Steven Spielberg. Me? Hey, Steve, Greg Hanley, I'm a songwriter, musician. I think that your next movie, you should win your Oscar and a Grammy. In other words, I'm going to give you 20% of my record to sync with your next movie. And when I talk to directors, and I didn't talk to Steven Spielberg, but I've talked to directors at his level. They've all been like, oh, yeah, cool. I'll send you a script. Let's see what you come up with. They don't have any problem. It's like they're surprised nobody's ever done it before. And here's a story. So Johnny Carson was looking for the theme song for The Tonight Show. He got thousands and thousands of submissions on tape. You know, these were all cassette tapes at the time. And one cassette tape said The Tonight Show by Johnny Carson and Paul Anka. Johnny Carson didn't write that song. Paul Anka did. But he was an owner of the master on the record. So that became, he didn't even listen to any of the tapes. He joked about it after he retired. He's like, all I saw was Johnny Carson and Paul Anka. And I knew I was getting a royalty stream every time that song played. He said, so it was a pay raise. He goes, I didn't even listen to it. It could have been, when am I? It could have been anything. He goes, I would have accepted it as the Tonight Show theme song because I was a writer. And so I that type of out of the box thinking is what takes people from here to here.
What do you think is going to be the next big thing, either in your industry and, you know, next big thing anywhere?
Well, I think nonprofits need to learn how to make more money in other areas. And one of the areas I've been working in is NFT, the NFT space. Mm-hmm. So the Miss America pageant, they have classic iconic photos. I've partnered them with an artist who's turning some of those photos into art. We're underlaying some records underneath them that I've worked with writers to write that are all around body positivity. Each one of those records is an NFT, which can create a ton of value. I'm working with the Rodney King Foundation. I had an artist create a painting of Rodney King getting beaten in the streets, George Floyd, and then Martin Luther King overlooking the whole scene, standing over a bus with Rosa Parks looking out the window. And even the Smithsonian said they'd hang it for a couple of months. And it's going to be shared. I got permission from, of course, all four families. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked to Bridget Floyd and Laura Parks and, you know, and that's, I think that is a painting that could go for millions of dollars and it's all for the charity, you know? So again, I think the blockchain and NFTs is going to be a big change in charities because you can find influencers that support your cause and turn it into something that could be sold as a one-off or a unique asset of the charity. So maybe if you have kids that you're trying to support, each child creates a piece of art. Well, that's a unique NFT. It's signed by the child. You know, you could offer a meet and greet with the kid who did the picture, you know, so people could take, I mean, you know, you got to sell these things and put these things out there. And I think there's a chance that you could create some real wealth within your organization based on looking again, outside the box. For me, there is no box, you know, but just finding different ways to create more value for people who are your fans. That's all.
You know, it's funny. I've been having a lot of NFT discussions lately and people are like, oh, I just don't understand them. I was like, you know what? I don't understand them either, but I missed the Bitcoin train and who knows, maybe Bitcoin is eventually valued at a million a piece. I don't know. Maybe I haven't missed a Bitcoin train, but 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to learn about some of that stuff and I chose to do some other things. And with the information I had at the time, you know, I wouldn't have chosen anything differently, but looking back, like I never took the time to even partially understand Bitcoin. And now with NFTs coming out, like I'm, you know what? I see the writing on the wall. This is something I'm uncomfortable with that I don't know about, but I'm going to spend some time learning about what the heck these are, how to use them, how to get involved, because that can only benefit me later. Craig, I could talk to you all day. I know you're a busy man. Bring it home, wrap us up. What else do you have to say to send us all off?
Way to put that type of pressure on me.
You're welcome.
I think we've said a lot of what needs to be said. I mean, for me, I think there's a couple of things. I just wrote a song called What If God Were Deaf? I want you to create a 90-day plan, a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan. What does the, if there was an article written about your business 3 years from now, what would it say? And let's work backwards to make that dream happen. What does your 100th year birthday speech look like? I want you to write down your goals on a piece of paper and show it to the universe. I don't know whether it's God, aliens, Buddha, but I know whenever I've written things down, they've happened. And when I don't write them down, it doesn't. So what if God were deaf? He's not hearing you. He's got to see you. Either put the effort in to understand what you're trying to do, or you've got to write it on a piece of paper and show him. So if you're really lazy, write it on a piece of paper. But if you're not, go out and do the things that you want God's help with or whoever you believe in, right? And you'll get that help. If anybody wants to reach out to me, of course, I'm at Craig Handley almost anywhere. YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. And I'm Craig at listentrust.com or Craig at socialclose.com. I'm easy to reach and I want to help you.
Hey, Craig, thank you so much for coming here and providing values, not only to what you do with your call center, the books that you've written, the music that you create, what you're doing in the NFT space. I don't know if there's a single thing about you that I don't like, but I really appreciate you being my guest today, Craig, and I'll let you know when this is all getting ready to come out.
Sounds great. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.